Hello and welcome to another episode of Africa Event Connect. I'm your host, Progeny Patha, and today we're joined by someone who has been at the forefront of sports, entertainment and media in Africa, Lyndon Barons, Managing Director of Arena Holdings. Now, Lyndon's career spans decades of leadership, innovation and building platforms that connect people through the shared energy of live events and purposeful experiences. Lyndon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and I'm very happy to be here with you.
I'm so glad you can make it. A man that has a busy, busy schedule. We're thrilled to have you here with us.
Fantastic.
So to start with, let's talk about leadership. You know, now people talk and often say that leaders are born with certain traits, but some people say that leaders become leaders because of their experience and the challenges. Looking back now, at your career and your journey, can you set the scene for us and tell us about those pivotal moments that shaped your approach to leadership and business?
Yeah, I think it's both, right? Sometimes people are born into a family where the parents are just natural leaders, so they learn from a very early age, right?
True.
So you could say that they have that kind of advantage. And others, like in my case, I was born in a very poor family, in crossroads and in a shack. And I had to survive. And if you must survive, you must get into action, right? So,
So
one important thing about leadership is you must be able to do things. You cannot be a leader and be idle, right?
That's true.
So from an earlier age, I was very involved, trying to do things, trying to survive. I was the youngest of six brothers, right? And so therefore I had to really fight to get to do something in my life. None of them finished matric. I was the first one to do so.
Wow.
Right? I was homeless at the age of 12, stayed with one of my classmates. And then you have to organize yourself. So I think all of those moments kind of infuse you with a little bit of action. And then eventually you take the leader. You know what it's like? You get to a sports field or a camp or somewhere and somebody says, okay, we've got to do something, and then the whole group stands still, and then somebody will say, come on, let's do it.
Yes.
And then you say, ah, there's the leader. So just those moments. I remember I was at primary school and I couldn't even kick the ball properly. You know, I mistimed it. But I became the captain of the football team. Just because I would say, okay, guys, come on, let's do it, right? And just take charge, right? So I didn't have parents to, my mother was there, but not a father to kind of give me that advantage of how to lead or what to lead. I just, got used to it by doing things and getting involved and saying, I have to survive.
Yeah, right? And so, that survival instinct forces you to do things and take control.
Yeah, you have to. So when I was, after being staying with different people, I decided I need to get a stable place to stay, right? I was in standard 8, which is, I think, grade 10 in modern language, just to show you my age. And then I heard about this school out in Cape Town. I'm a Cape Townian in Kales River that had a hostel. So I decided to go there. And when I came there, firstly, it was an English medium school, and I grew up in a very Afrikaans environment. So I couldn't even speak properly. And then I said, okay, and of course, it's fee paying.
Yes.
And I didn't have money. So I said to them, well, I'll work, for my fees. I'll clean the classrooms. I'll sweep. I'll do whatever I needed to. Can I just stay here? And then that's it. And with that, I just got busy and I became the head boy of the school. And I don't know where I learned. I had this idea. I took an Afrikaans Bible and an English Bible and I put it next to each other. It was the best translation ever. Was easy, and that's how I got to know English.
Wow, that is absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's clear that leadership isn't just about titles, right?
Yeah,
it's about that resilience, learning from your setbacks, and making a plan and turning the challenges into opportunities.
Absolutely, you've got to look for it, and you've got to take it when it comes your way, and so my life is. Evolved from there. I remember I then said to my secretary then a couple of many years later, I want to do an MBA, but I don't have the money, right? And then eventually she came to me and said, okay, here's the Cosmopolitan magazine, and there's a competition to win a scholarship to go study in the UK. I said, are you crazy? Firstly, I'm not female, if you didn't notice, it's Cosmo. But, the closing date is tomorrow. I'll cut the story short. you know, we called and called Cosmo Associated Press and said, listen, we need a few days. And they said no. Eventually the woman said, okay, be here. This was the Friday. And the closing date is the Friday afternoon. Yeah. And the woman says, okay, be here Monday 7:45. And because I'm going to give this the pack to my boss at 8. If you're not here, and we work the whole weekend and handed it in. And then I won the scholarship and I went to London to do my MBA. And, you know, from there, and I joined Standard Bank then in London. That's another story, but, you know, and then they tried to recruit me twice, and I just said no. I didn't really like the ethos of the bank, you know, because when we were in our black communities, it was difficult to get a bursary or a scholarship or a loan studying from them because you had to have your parents sign all the paperwork, which, you know.
And not everybody had it,
right? And so I just said, no, I'm not interested to join you guys because I tried twice, you know, and you guys didn't give it to me for my undergrad. And I did my undergrad mostly at night. I studied at UWC and, you know, paid my way through. And actually, I finished the course and I only graduated 2 years afterwards because I kept on paying to get the thing done.
Course.
And then eventually the chairman came to see me, Konrad Strauss in London, and he said to me, okay, what is it then that you want to do? I said, well, the first thing you guys have to do is to transform your bank in the new South Africa. This was way back in the year of our Lord, 1997. And then he said to me, okay, why not come and transform the bank? And then I became the head of transformation at Standard Bank. And from there, now it was the challenge on leadership. You come there as a black person, and you have a black community within the bank that expects change. And how are you going to manage them? And how are you going to manage the transformation, transition process? Because you have colleagues that you can't leave behind that comes from a different background. And so it was quite challenging for me as a leader to be able to manage both of those groups and to, you know, to direct the bank. Sim, who is now the CEO, was a product of the program. You know, a lot of the Standard Bankers that I know from those years, I then worked in the bank and then had to provide leadership to take us on a journey of transformation.
Yeah. Now, from those days and those challenges to where you are today at Arena Holdings, tell us about that, your role currently.
Yeah, well, I've gone through many because I'm a change agent, really. So after Standard Bank and being head of transformation there, I was asked by the Minister of Sport then, those years, and business to go and be the first CEO of the Olympic Committee of South Africa.
Yes, I saw that.
So I transitioned from corporate banking into to the Olympic Committee, and I then put together the concept of SASCOC, because it was NOXA then.
Yes.
And then the same issue, I had to bring all the different bodies, the disability, the school sport, and university sport, and negotiate, you know, a new dispensation and how to structure the SASCOC, and then bring sponsors on board. So I had the advantage of being coming from the corporate world, so I could get the Nedbanks and the Vodacoms and the Telcoms and easier, because they all wanted South Africa to thrive. If you think of those years, 1990, while I joined there in 2002, maybe 2001, we were still a baby in the global world. So we had a lot of corporate support, but they wanted to ensure that there's proper structure, there's proper management, there's proper operational oversight, there's proper governance. And therefore, there are somebody that, from the banking fraternity to come in and set up those structures. And that's quite important when you want something to sustain out of the proper business plan.
Yes.
And often we forget. And as entrepreneurs, we just get going at times, right?
That's true.
So anyway, so I went through that. And then I left there and I went into my own businesses. Now you really learn, right? You become an entrepreneur.
There's no other way.
And then you do your MBA every day all over in the community. Yes.
In real time.
I was, you know, at that stage, everybody was looking for a BE partner. And, you know, I was investing and divesting and changing, but I had this penchant for taking, you know, a kind of struggling businesses and reviving them, and I quite enjoyed that.
Wow.
Yeah, but one of our businesses went under in the IT arena, and that was really tough. We were really flying, you know, but then interpersonal relationships, etc., you know, within the management team or shareholders really caused us to start disintegrating. So basically, I just sold off all the businesses, but I had one that I just loved, and that was my marketing and promotions business that I had a stake in.
Okay.
And so therefore, I landed up at Prime Media. I then sold the business to Prime Media.
Oh, I see.
But I had to then go and work there to do my earnout and do profit shares and all of that.
Of course.
And it was the World Cup coming, so with my background, you know, coming
from
Sascock and the Football World Cup, you know, we then put together a very, very good program. We had three fan parks. The one in Soweto was mine, Sandton, and Centurion. We were busy. We had hotels booked. We had our own set of buses. We didn't go with the FIFA buses. We handled all of that. So I spent a good couple of years at Prime Media, left, you know, the end of my payout and went on a sabbatical traveling a little bit. And then they asked me to come back and be group CEO of all the sport and marketing and hospitality businesses. Mm-hmm. So I went back to Prime Media and then put those together and formed Prime Media, what is Prime Media Sport,
mm-hmm.
which was then sold off to a group, which I then went with as Mega Pro, which is they're still doing.
Yes.
Mega Pro still does Springbok sponsorships and cricket sponsorships, and those are all the things that I was involved in at that stage.
Okay.
And I went there, and then I decided, well, I needed to do my own thing again. You know, this itch.
Yes, you know, as being, a leader.
Yeah, try to. You've got to, you know. So I then started my consulting business again called Strategy Imagineers, and then I've been going with that since. But then I take on projects, and people come to me and say, oh, come and help us.
Mm.
And for my sins, I went to horse racing. To transform horse racing, I became the CEO of Horse Racing South Africa, the authority,
right.
And then had to restructure. And that tested my leadership again,
okay.
Because when I got there, all the staff was really of one race, if I may call it,
yes.
As such. And now coming in as a first black person to transform, and how do you bring them on board? So I'm very much a theme-based person. Every year, I will run with a theme.
Right.
Doesn't matter where I am for my staff. I galvanize us around the theme. So you then you look at what the issues are within the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So for example, when I joined horse racing, I wanted to do teamwork. So I was bringing in black people, and so teamwork. So I kind of teamwork makes the dream work. But then I say, okay, I have to work with them to say, okay, what's up? Our passion, where is the common factor, right?
Mm.
So if you're in horse racing, you know, you all seem to maybe love horses or like horses or enjoy. So you make that. So I say one passion, one purpose, one dream, one team.
Ah.
So then that was my campaign that I then worked on as a leader to get everybody to be aligned.
Yes.
And that's like when I joined the Olympic Committee, before I joined from Standard Bank, I sent them all a book a week before I arrived. Then if you recall the book, Who Moved My Cheese?
Yes. Oh, I love it.
Right. Yeah. Easy read, really, yes. You know, but, you know, at that stage, everybody was really gung-ho about it. I sent everybody a copy, and I said, okay, I'm going to move your cheese when I get there, so get ready. And then, so when I got there, that's it. We only spoke about cheese.
But you set the scene, you set the tone,
yeah.
And people knew what to expect. And I love that again. One purpose.
Yeah. One passion.
You start with a passion. You start with a passion. So it's one passion.
Yeah. One purpose. What do you want to see? You want to protect the horse. You want to protect the punters. You want to, et cetera. Right? And
right.
Then it's one dream. We want to be the best in the world.
One
we want
dream.
To, you know, do. And then we have to be one team.
One purpose, one passion,
yeah.
One dream, one team.
One team.
I love it.
And then it all encapsulates in teamwork makes the dream work. Right? And then we do that. This year, for example, with my team at Arena, it's all about we are champion, right? To say that we think like champions.
Yes.
So with that embeds excellence. We've got to go the extra mile. Discipline, you know, so we bring all of those values in, but it's all around I am champion. So I'm not Lyndon, I am champion.
I'm champion.
So that's my theme for this year. So, and I find it if you give people a vision, something to think about and dream about and
mm-hmm.
visualize,
mm.
you know, as a leader, you know, they react a lot more because constantly you can refer them to that.
Mm.
If they're non-performance, then you can say, but do you think you're behaving like a champion? Right? So you've got all of it because they've now subscribed
yes.
to this. They've signed up for it, you know,
yes.
etc. And then, you know, what I did with them this year as well, I don't know if you're familiar with the six hats, thinking
hats. Yes,
yes. Yeah, the green and the... Then I use that to explain to them that the team is made up of different people with different inclinations, with different experiences, with different views of life. And that is why we should work together. And to be a champion, you've got to think of all of those kind of aspects and to weave it into your style and grow and see where your weaknesses are. Often you'll say, right, I'm a black cap, I'm a green cap.
Mm.
But as a leader, you need to have a bit of all of those. So that's how true. Do we develop your other hats or whatever the case might be? So in the, I can then easily see, and I actually had the team around the table and I went through it. And then I told them to firstly decide which one is their most prominent one.
Right.
And then I asked them to do it for everybody else.
Ah.
And so Lyndon will get up and say, oh, well, I'm a green hat. And they'll say, okay, how many of you had him as a green hat? Right. And then he'll say, okay, wow, 10 of us had him, you know.
Yes.
Only one had him. Oh, say something. Okay, what do we learn from that? How do we then help, you know, with a person in other areas? And so we go through. And as a leader, your job is to galvanize the team, you know, and get the best out of them. I always believe that you must leave people better than you found them. As a leader, and so you need to put in as much as you can, because by doing that, you're actually also learning and you're growing as a leader.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. Well, I think your team are very privileged to have you as the leader, if that's the kind of motivation they get, because not many teams get that. And especially in the business that you're in, where you're in such a dynamic space, right? And there's so much that's changing. The audiences are changing. The way we consume media is changing, right? And how do you keep that energy going so that they can do their jobs better, right?
Absolutely. And often you'll find, because the large part of our revenue revolves around print, and you can get very despondent when you see the trend. But if you explain to them and you show them, you know, expect this. This is what we're expecting.
Mm.
And what are we doing?
Mm.
Like tomorrow, Wednesday and Friday, my team will be pitching to me and to all the others all the new ideas that we had then. We get so busy, we can't get. So I allocated it. I said, choose which ones you want. You're going to do your business plans on this.
Yes.
So, and now you're going to pitch to us.
Wonderful.
And out of the 20-odd ideas, we're going to just choose five, right, to go with. But so you come and you pitch your idea to us.
Love it.
And it's just a good way of getting people. Firstly, now they've got to do the research.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
Understand what data, because we'll ask them, you know, how come you've come up with this idea?
Yes.
What is the
what
research?
Supports it?
What supports it? Yeah, you've got to do it. How are you going to market it? You know? And in that way, you also get people to be passionate about the projects. And then what we'll do with the other 15, if, you know, which is five, we'll park them.
Yes.
It's not like they won't be done. We'll do the first five, and then we'll get back and say, okay, are they still relevant?
Yes.
You know, and then we'll do the same, just to get new ideas, and we say, okay, right. We know that moving from print, we have digital, but it's not going to give us the returns we want, so what else should we do? Right? And then we start saying, okay, what I call adjacencies, other businesses that feed off. So, okay, we're living off the pages, so we do business day dialogues. Right, we will do Sunday Times events, right?
Yes.
We do Sunday Times top 100 companies. We do top brands. And now we say, okay, what are the lifestyle things? You know, the other day we just did something called vinyl and cigars, you know, where people could come and get a cigar and listen to DJs with vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a networking session, really.
Absolutely.
You know, and we brought you know, to senior leadership together. And it was time for people just to bond and share and exchange. So we come up with all of these new ideas, live events, music events, etc. Because we know that people right now, they love engaging. Remember, we came out of COVID and slowly we got used to each other again and, you know, craving for events.
Yes.
And I think if you have to look in that crystal glass going forward, is that more and more events, more and more engagement, more and more experiences. You know, people want to engage with each other.
Absolutely. Now going back to your, I mean, you have a rich history in sport as well, and entertainment properties with Arena Holdings, right, in Africa. But we've seen, when you talk about events, there's some sports and entertainment events that just come and go. And there's some that will stay. What are we missing here? Why are these events just fading away into the background? What do you think is lacking?
Again, there are various reasons, and I'll just draw on my own experience.
Yes, please.
I don't, you know, I started something called Nelson Mandela Football Invitational, because when I traveled internationally and it was Mandela Day, over the years, you hear nothing anymore. And I said, but surely it's a UN endorsed day. The world should be celebrating it. And I thought, what can I do? And so I thought, okay, if I take a great brand like Mr. Mandela and I put it against another great brand, you know, then hopefully it will explode. And then because I'm a football fan and I love a team in red called Manchester United, I then went to Manchester United. I said, hey, it's Mr. Mandela's birthday. Come to South Africa and play. And then we televise it globally because it was during the off-season. So there's no other football, really.
Yes.
You know, of course, now there's no more off-season, right? But
yes,
that was just 2012.
And so I said, did you do that?
Yes. I said, there's a great brand of Manchester United, you know, and here's Mr. Mandela's brand, and these two can come together, right, and take Mandela Day. And so we even had a cake for Mr. Mandela on SABC, and we cut it up with Alex Ferguson as the manager then, and we did it in Durban. And I said, I'm not playing Kaizer Chiefs and Pirates because those are the known teams.
Yes.
I'm playing in Durban, I'm playing AmaZulu, the local one.
Yes.
And so you also had that other social impact and bring their fans and also lift their profile globally, etc., because Chiefs and Pirates are already big brands.
Yes, okay? That is true.
And we did that. And the next year, I brought Manchester City in. That's the year that Mr. Mandela passed away, 2013. So we had a couple of challenges because he was ill and all of those things. Now, that died a sudden death, not because of his passing, but the rand-dollar exchange. If you look at what happened between 2013 and then, you know, from like 10 to 12 rands to the dollar, I can't remember exactly, we're sitting at nearly 20. So it's unaffordable. So we couldn't do it. Anymore. I called them last year and they said, Lyndon, you're going to pay at least three times what you paid for, you know. And it was a 35 million job to bring them here. And then you have to recoup that and make profit.
Right.
Because you must always be a profit motive, even if you do good.
Yes.
You know,
that
to make it
true.
Sustainable. And that's one of the reasons that sometimes the things we get involved in, we do for really good purposes, but it cannot sustain. If you don't have income, you cannot sustain it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that just failed as an example. And then the next year I bought the Liverpool Football Academy and brought it to the country again, you know. And then the fees in pound terms was a problem for us. And then management, I had a problem. So you find sometimes it's those factors, you know, the external factors. But a lot of the other events, there's no good plan. We don't do a business plan, right? The governance structures are not in place. And so you find that some things just fall by the wayside. Or sometimes it started with the wrong intention. You know, there's no proper alignment, you know, and then after a while it just kind of fizzles out because there's no reason. It's like you just add to it. Another example, when I was at Standard Bank, I was then head of marketing and sponsorships there at the bank. We had this new guy, I won't mention his name, but he joined the bank, right? And he was dead on that we should sponsor Chiefs and Pirates. And I was dead set against it because I'm all about spreading the love to other teams too, because everybody sponsors Chiefs and Pirates. And then you find the league is lopsided, like it's been even when Sundowns came in with Patrice Motsepe. You can see they dominate completely because they just buy up all the players and they can do three teams. Right.
True.
So I was not that kind, and given my background and trying to convince them. And I said, firstly, also, look at the brand alignment. We're going for two teams at the upper echelons, right? But yet we're a national brand. We're an African brand. So why do you want to go with two teams? and alienate ourselves from the others.
Mm.
Right?
Yes.
So if you are a national brand, you want to really go to national teams, okay, so that you can support that, or African teams. So subsequent, Standard Bank was a sponsor of CAF. That's right. Because now it speaks yes. into the Africa. It's the biggest bank in Africa. It's much better brand
makes
alignment.
Sense. Yes.
So some of those things will die because the alignment is just not spot on. I mean, there was another. So often brands, you find they just slap the logos on events. And I don't, but I have to mention, for example, there was a time when it was the DHL Stormers mm-hmm. playing the DHL Sharks
right.
at the DHL Stadium. Anyways.
Talk about alignment. but that makes so much sense in terms of what you're saying and driving consistent events so that they can be sustainable. People take it, I think, event planners, or when you're conceiving an event, when you're putting an event together, bringing it together, yeah. and whether in terms of the cultural relevance, finding its place in the community figuring out how it's going to impact the community mm-hmm. as well. I like that. And also ensuring that it has a business plan. I appreciate that, because many event organizers cannot see beyond just the joy it might bring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you cannot see past the joy, again, it will not sustain itself because it's not profitable. It's not financially feasible in the mm-hmm. long term. And yes, we don't do this just for the love of it. We are all in business and it needs to be profitable. But it takes time to be profitable as well. It takes time to build.
Sure.
But if without a plan, it cannot get there, right?
Absolutely. And then also the issue of authenticity is quite important, you know, to really be authentic about what you're trying to achieve with your brand and how you will relate to other brands. And often people forget about that, you know, for the deeper, deeper purpose that you must
yes.
seek,
yes.
you know, for that kind of alignment. And then if you do your proper, so everyone in my office, they know that they must have a business case, right? And by the way, if they don't know how, we teach them now and
wonderful.
Get them to define it. So you're also building the person to say, okay, why am I doing this again? Right? How am I going to make money? What are the risks associated? What can go wrong? Apply their minds to it. And so you can do risk mitigating strategies to say, okay, well, the venue. I mean, last week we had the Legal Innovation Summit
mm-hmm.
and we went through everything and we were really, really prepared,
mm-hmm.
you know. But guess what? There was a power outage, not load shedding.
A power
outage in the whole area. But of course, we have a generator.
Yes.
But we didn't use a generator for months now because we're so used to load shedding.
Of course.
And we just didn't double check the generator. We didn't
yes.
plan for that, etc. You know?
Yes.
So I said, okay, right now again, we go through that again. Every event, doesn't matter. We don't take things for granted
yes.
now.
Yep.
We make sure that on that day that the generator is working and that the person that works the generator is
available.
Is available. Not yet to
yes,
wait.
Because I think after a while, lots of teams get complacent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about having those check boxes. And they're not there just to be for the sake of their purpose. Because
yeah.
when you need it, like in this case with the generator, it had to be checked.
Absolutely.
You yeah. know, for a reason.
Yeah.
For the longevity of that event.
Correct, yeah. And it's the attention to detail, right? Also, when you talk about sustainability and how do you keep events going, it's being trying to be very, very detailed about it, because generally we like the overall idea and it's great, okay, let's do it. And I say an idea is never a great idea unless you can implement it greatly.
So the plan.
Well, the plan is important, you know. You write down the detail. You know, I learned this actually from a friend of mine. He became my friend
yeah.
many, many years ago. For my sons, I was also a math and science teacher many years ago. And
what didn't you do, Lyndon?
Yeah. There's a few things I can't name, but it's not for the mic. And, you know, he used to walk around at school.
Yeah.
He was the guy who arranged the sport, and he had this file, you know, this hard thing
yeah.
on that he had his pages. And every time he gets into the meeting, he'll say, okay, Lyndon, you're doing this. You know, John, you're doing this. Virginia,
yes.
you're doing this. And he always had that list and always impressed me. So I kind of took that, you know, into my professional life and always. So when I wanted to migrate from teaching
yes.
into the business world, then generally, it was always difficult. They said, but you're a teacher. You don't know how to do business. I kind of rejigged my story to say that I can do administration really well.
That's one thing we can
do. You get what I'm saying? I can do that. I can do planning well. I can do this.
Absolutely.
And then, okay, all right, yeah. It's a different story. But I learned then the details and how to be, to give all the line items and to give it attention and to make sure that you cover your bases on all the aspects.
So if we look at a business plan can be really, really detailed, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It can be really intense.
Yeah.
But for your teams, if you want them to present something to you succinctly, because yes, they probably have a full plan, but when they're presenting to you, what are the, like, four top things that you would want to see first for you to make that decision?
So firstly, I've reduced it to 2 pages, PowerPoint pages.
Well done. It's,
yeah. So you kind of, you can write the longer version, but when you present to me, you give me 2 pages,
yes.
Right? And in those 2 pages, I want to first know, what problem are you solving?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you solve a problem, you have a better chance,
yes,
of success. So right, what's the problem and what are you trying to solve with your idea? And that must be quite clear,
mm-hmm.
You know? And then your next would be, okay, how are you going to monetize this? I always want to see the risks because you have to be realistic. While we look at all the positive things, you must put that black cap on.
Yes.
And look at all, you know, and look at all the risks and then have your plans, you know, around it. And then what partnerships do you need? Who do you need to fulfill that? If I have to reach it to 4 mm-hmm. big things.
Yes.
Because we must also realize that no man is an island. We can't do things on our own.
Yes.
You know, and a very much part of my leadership style is around the word Ubuntu. And somehow I've embraced it very early. A person is a person through other persons. And then, you know, I always want to know who I'm going to do this with. Who will bring the best out of me? You know, I've always said when I do something, I would like to have a team that's better than me. You know, around me to lift me up, you know, in my business world. Sometimes it's not, then you have help the others, but that's it. So when you do a business plan, I want to know who are the other important people around you. So you can also assess what you need from those people. And then you can also assess, are they better partners? So once somebody tell me these are the people that I need, you can say, okay, how about this one? How about that one? You can enhance the business plan, but you want to know who is within your ecosystem, who is within your partnership system, who do you need to connect with, you know. So I always say to the guys, the 3 things that's important for us, you know, it is content, obviously, because we're in the media business.
Of course.
Entry level is good quality content. You can't do that, right? You don't belong there. And then second is to have a positive culture. A culture of engagement, you know, a culture of partnerships, you know. And then the last one is connections, really. You know, who do you connect with? Who do you need to make you the best that you can be? And in that way, those are the things that I will need in a business plan. I mean, there's other things you want to,
you
want to look at your financial projections, when do you break even, and all of those things. But you don't get there if you don't meet some of these criteria, you know, if you don't
feel
upfront.
Yes.
Because then you say, okay, now let's look.
Yes, now let's look into the details.
Let's look at some of the other details, you know.
Absolutely. Now, when we talk about all these events that we start to formulate for whatever reason, because they all have purpose and fit into the community, partnerships and sponsorships and brand alignment, is absolutely crucial, right? So we spoke about some of them earlier, but what does true alignment between a brand and event look like for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also very interesting, because you can take various aspects of the brand, but each brand must know its own personality, its own vision, its own purpose. And then when you do something, you try and align it. And maybe one or two good examples and two not so good examples, right?
Both will be beneficial.
You know, so if you look at, for example, Dove had this whole campaign in South Africa and globally about women and their self-esteem.
Yes, that's true.
Right, and that was just a good partnership with women, right, to see how they align. And, of course, Dove cleans you and brings out the various aspects, you know. And then we have some bad examples of, you know, of alignment that we've had. I've mentioned one already.
Yes.
You know, but really getting that true purpose. going and making sure that you align Airbnb, for example, they said your home is anywhere, you feel at home anywhere.
That's true.
So that was also a kind of really good alignment. In South Africa, again, in projects that I've worked on, so I worked with the Springbok rugby team.
Yes.
And one of the great alignments I've seen was with Absa Bank, though. You know, when they were sponsored, they're no longer. It's now FNB. I'm not saying that they're not.
Yes.
But the time when Absa was a sponsor, it was really good because it was this amalgamated bank of South Africa that's come together. And if you take the Springbok team, and they've come from the different teams. And so we played a lot on that.
Yes.
You know, in putting that together, going. So we've seen those kind of alignments, you know, and with broader purpose, and to say, okay, now we have to go down the line into the community and make sure that we unearth new talent and we work with, you know, with the talent, you know, that's there in the community. So you have to really apply yourself and you have to analyze your brand and make sure that there's some alignment.
But on the reverse side of that, as we create the events, right? Mm-hmm. We decide that this is going to work well. What are the best practices or secrets to securing those partners, the right partners, the right brands, to align with our event, whether it's a sporting event, an entertainment event, you know, what would those secrets be? Because, I mean, your teams are responsible for that,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. So what we do generally, I mean, you'll find some people will just go and sell events.
Mm.
But we're different, right? We talk about strategic partnerships. That's my focus in the business. So when you, by virtue of the word strategic partnerships, you can already see
when
eventing goes together. So we understand firstly what is it that we want to achieve. Mm-hmm. Generally, when I go to a client, I go and I say, what is it that you want? What are your brand objectives? So I don't go and sell to event managers. I go at CEO or CMO level.
Right.
Right, and I go and I speak to whether it's Margaret Ninaba at Standard Bank or Sydney and Bailey at APSA, or you know, when Ari was there at APSA, you go at that level and you talk about what is it that you want to achieve, what's your vision with the business, right? Where is it going? Then I come back and I say, okay, right, here are some great ideas that I think can help you, you know, and
elevate the brand,
And I do brand connection. That's it. I'll say this is it. For example, let's take Standard Bank and the Joy of Jazz. I started that 25, 26 years ago when I was there. And there was a stage that they decided that maybe they were to withdraw from it. And I reminded them of the brand connection with it. You know, the jazz about improvisation, you know, giving expression, you know, when you play jazz or you enjoy jazz. And that is so much part of what the bank wants to be. It wants to be flexi, it wants to go, wants to be able to provide to the various clientele, target markets, etc. And then they've now really cemented the jazz. Standard Bank has been involved for 26 years. That is now an example of good brand alignment, you know, giving enjoyment back to the high end, but doing youth. You know, we started the youth jazz band at the Grahamstown Arts Festival.
Oh,
so we
yes.
say, right, let's understand the strata of our target markets, and let's see if this can, how far does this stack up? Not everyone can stack up completely, right? And
yes.
so you'll say, okay, some will be. Then we need to fill this gap with something else. And then we need to do that. And so you do that kind of alignment. So we do a lot of understanding what your brand values are. You know, we must make sure that it's relevant to your target market. A big thing for me is, what is your purpose? What is your vision? What is your mission? Ultimately, as a bank, why do you exist? You know, do you exist to take money from people, or do you exist to make people thrive?
You know? It's been wonderful to see lots of the, if you look at financial institutions, and we see a lot of it recently as well, where they're owning their space, defining their space. So Standard Bank, be it the Joy of Jazz, or last weekend I was at the R&B Style Classics, you know, and each of them, and APSA owning sport. You know, so each of them are finding their defining spaces. But again, it goes back, like you're saying, to marrying the right event or the right cultural event, let's put it that way, with the right brand values, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so you have to. And I've seen in the last couple of years a little bit of blurring of the lines.
Okay.
Before, they used to be very strict.
Yes.
You know, and now I've seen a little bit. Like the other day, EPSA had a luxury jazz at Marble.
Oh, really?
Which, yeah, they would never have done in the past.
That's interesting. Standard
Bank is in jazz.
Yes.
We stay out of jazz.
We'll find our own niche.
Correct. We've seen that. Football has always been a contested terrain.
That's
and we've
true.
Always seen them coexist. So the Nedbank Cup is there.
Yes.
You know, and then EPSA sponsored the league, but they no longer, and I can say EPSA coming back into football slowly, you know, in the various aspects. So I've seen the blurring because there are less properties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the bank clientele is a lot more diversified than before, and they're all trying to go through the line, right throughout. So therefore, it starts blurring. It's no longer Standard Bank used to be the bank for big business. All the big deals will get done. They, you know, but now they're number one in home loans in the country. They've always been there and thereabouts, but it's now a defining factor. You know, so EPSA wants to be number one in home loans. EPSA, who's the best car financier in your mind? You know, you
yeah.
think it was West Bank before.
Yes, that's
you know,
true.
You know, that was the name because, you know.
Yeah, that was associated with
yes, and now they say, okay, but now we also need to get to the, what I would call the majority market. All right, and when they get to the majority market, then there are a few things to do. Music and football, really. Music and entertainment is still rates highly as far as that is concerned.
So now, if we talk about the future of live events in and media in Africa, right? If you had to predict the biggest disruption in African live events and media over the next 5 years, what do you think that would be?
Well, it's all about digital, right? We've seen that everywhere. It can never, and AI has come in. But I can, probably my view is it will never replace the engagement factor. But it will enhance. So you'd find that, you know, I was with this youngster the other day, son, we speak football. He's a son to a friend of mine.
Okay.
And we speak football all the time. But now he does gaming on football. But the team needs to win in real life.
Yes.
For him to get his points on the gaming. You know,
yeah.
So you can see that interplay,
yes.
you know, between the two. So I don't think it can go completely the other way. I think they'll coexist and more. A few years ago, I experimented with something where I took Robert Marabo, who was a top sports presenter in the country, and I took Chile Boy Rapele, a rugby player, and I took, I can't remember the lady's name, she was a female rugby player.
Okay.
And we were in Durban, and we were watching the Springboks play, and we were actually in a room talking about the match and commentating and going live on Facebook Live, et cetera,
okay,
for people
yeah.
to see. So again, I think those kind of situations will, but you don't need to listen to the studio only, but you can listen to your friends maybe or
that's
others.
True.
Right.
That's true.
Or you can have a WhatsApp group or a channel now
that's
where
true.
You can give commentary. And sometimes you watch alone at home.
Yes.
But you wish you could have somebody to talk to. Now imagine
to share with, you to scream
you,
with.
Yeah, you'll pick. Hey, did you see that? Go, you know,
yes.
and you can talk. And I think those are the kind of things that will happen. It will be a lot more personalized. There will come a time that you're watching football, but you only want to follow Cristiano Ronaldo. You'll see the match, but you want to see up close and personal
yes.
where he is. Those things will happen.
Wow.
You
that
know?
Would be really interesting.
So it's just how AI and how digital will manifest itself, but they will work closely together. Just another example, just maybe just off the point, but just to illustrate the integration. We did a campaign for a bank in print, right? And so we had all these print ads, and at the end of it all, so you had to use your phone with a QR code. So now we bring, and you have to enter, and you could win an original painting by a top artist.
Wow.
Right. That integration was fantastic, you know. So you had to go and buy the paper, you know, then your QR code, then fill in. And while you're doing, of course, you get information.
Of course.
About the bank or whatever the case might be. And, you know, it's on the bank's little mini site that we've created. And you now enter the competition for a piece of art because the bank is very involved in art.
Right.
Okay. And we saw that integration. And I think a lot more of those kind of things will happen where you'd be able to go to a music concert, but you'd be able to spend time with friends talking about it, you know. Of course, we have this simplistic way of doing it. You're sharing these days already, you know. But it's the kind of integration. And often you find you might watch or you experience an artist, but you can talk to the person later on as well or during the event. So I think live events will just increase. Because people want that engagement, they want that enjoyment, they want that experience. You know, I think it's Maya Angelou that said, you know, that people will forget what you told them, you know, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. Yeah. Right. So if you just take that kind of lesson into it, then feeling and engagement and experience will grow. The fact that it will be linked into the digital space, and the digital space will enhance it. Yes, all of those things will happen, you know. Look at what's happened now. Vinyls are back, I'm just saying.
I know, right?
Right.
Exactly. But in your space, I mean, you're in a very interesting space right now where you work with some amazing brands and partners, some amazing events and media. And I think merging and both print and digital, right? And you have this opportunity merging digital, print, live events with purposeful brands and marrying those purposeful brands. What is it that you as a team are looking forward to in the future in terms of how to reinvent that circle?
So what they've done already, and I think this will still continue, hybrid events, right? So before, if you just look at our journey during COVID, we were all online at a stage, and then people came back. But we didn't lose the hybrid aspect thereof. So the Legal Innovation Summit we had a week ago, we had people in the room, but we could still bring a speaker from America across part. We had people connecting from Sweden, from Nigeria, and all. So now your access improves immediately.
Yes, your reach is greater.
So much greater. So I think we will continue, you know, with that, and that will grow even more. We've seen it being used in the educational facilities for years already, but now it just takes on a different format, a different sexiness and how you do it. The tech is better, you know. You feel the person is in the room with you, et cetera. So hybrid events will continue going forward, and we'll experiment a lot more with that. This week, for example, let me go back to what happened last week. I told you about the power outage that we had, and the panel didn't take place, right? So what we did is we took those same people into the studio, and we now did that panel with them, and we're sending it, you know, to everybody so that you have that kind of interaction. So I think the hybrid events will continue going forward. And as you use AI a lot more, we don't even understand what it will be able to do for us to take all of that information, you know, and package it differently for the consumer going
forward.
That's
true. Yeah. So as we close, Lyndon, if you were to share three principles any event organizer or brand manager should keep in mind when building for the future, when you're building events for the future, what do you think those should be?
Well, I would say three, all starting with an H.
Okay.
Firstly, use your head for your strategy.
Uh-huh.
And that means data, insights, you know, brand relevance, all those kind of things that you should do in your business plan that use maybe your intellect and skills, etc. It's a no-brainer. You've got to start with that and make sure that you have all of those things right.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is bring in the heart. Okay, and that's the emotion, because again, you need to have that connection with the people. It's no use doing an event and people feel disconnected.
Yeah,
they don't. So the way you do it, the special moments, you know, I always ask the guys, how are you going to surprise and delight people in this thing?
Yes.
You know, it's very, very important to connect, because as I say, when they leave, they must have something that will resonate. They can't remember everything that you've done, you know, especially when you do these dialogues and different kinds of events that you do. I mean, the fun events they enjoy, you know. Sunday we had, we launched our luxury club, which is a new, you know, where we give full concerts, you can become a member, and we had a party, you know, everybody was there. And
wonderful.
And they remember that. But then I always say, what is the thing you want them to resonate. So then you bring in the heart. And lastly, I'm a great believer in action, your hand. You've got to do your work. You cannot be a leader, you know, whether it's in eventing or in any other aspect. If you don't do the dirty work yourself, you've experienced it yourself, or you know how to do it. You've got to roll up your sleeves. You've got to do the hard graft, you know, and you also set an example for others. So in eventing, we know that generally there is hard work in it, but go the extra mile always in how you prepare. And that those will be my last three principles.
Wonderful. Head, heart, and hands.
Yes.
Those things that we all have, no excuses for putting that into practice. But that is truly, truly a good takeaway for us. So, Lyndon, thank you so much for joining us. It's been truly, truly a pleasure to learn more about you. And your leadership skills and insights have been so, so inspirational. And I'm sure that all our listeners are going to be walking away with lots to think about and lots to change as they move forward.
Thank you so much, Brojani, for having me. And I had a great time chatting to you.
It's been an absolute pleasure listening and learning from Lyndon's inspiring conversation and insights. From sustainability to partnerships, leadership, and the future of live events, it's all real-world examples that he shared with us to give us so much to think about as we continue to grow Africa's place on the global stage. And then to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us, subscribe, and share Africa Event Connect for more conversations with leaders shaping the future of events and experiences across Africa. I'm your host, Progeny Patha, and thanks for joining us.